מסכת בבא קמא דף עין ט, תנו רבנן, גנב ונתן לאחר וטבח. גנב ונתן לאחר ומחר. Someone steals an ox and he gives it to someone else to slaughter for him. He doesn't do the slaughtering himself. He takes it to a butcher or someone who knows how to slaughter, to do it on behalf. Nevertheless, the thief is liable to pay 4 and 5. The thief doesn't have to be the one that actually slaughters it. Even if he gives someone else for him, still he's liable. Similarly, if one guy steals the ox and then he gives it to an agent to sell on his behalf, right? Can you take this to the market? I don't have time today. Do me a favor, take it to the market and sell it for me. The thief still has to pay the 4 and 5, even though he's not the one that actually did the selling. Ganav hikdish, ganav hikif, ganav hechelif, ganav natan b'matana, ganav ufara chobo, ganav ufara behekefo, ganav shalach siblonot bebet hamiv, b'shem tashomer ba'av hachamisha. All these are cases of where it's not exactly selling in the normal way of giving someone the ox and taking money for it, but it is still transferring ownership in one way or another. So if the thief stole an ox and then gave it to Hekdesh, this is, we're following the opinion that says, what's the difference, right? Mali machal hediot, mali machal shamayim. What's the difference if you sell it to a layperson or you sell it to shamayim? It's the same thing. You're still transferring the ownership out. And so the thief is liable 4 and 5. Or he stole it and he sells it on credit. He gives it to some guy, a buyer, and the buyer says, I have no money now. He says, okay, you can pay me later. So that's still called a sale. Or he switches it. Okay, I give you an ox and you give me a television. So that's still a sale to pay 4 and 5. Or he steals an ox and he gives it as a gift. He doesn't take any money for it. Still, the point is he's transferring the ownership of it. Or he steals an ox and he uses it to pay a loan, right? He owes somebody money. He says, here, take this ox instead. Or use it to pay something that he bought on debt, right? He got a television from someone and says, I don't have money and I'll pay you later. And so now he says, okay, here, I'll give you the ox for it. Or he got engaged, this thief, and he sends the ox to his in-law's house as a gift to put it on the swanny. So beautiful. They all walk in. They see this nice ox there, right? What a great hatan. See what he's going to make a great husband. Look at this nice ox. They don't know that he stole it. So in all these cases, even though he didn't technically sell it for money, still, these are all transfers of ownership, and therefore the thief has to pay 4 or 5 times. Ma'ikam ashmalan, ashmina nesha, ganav natan l'acher v'tavach, diyesh shalich l'dvar avera. Af agav, debechol ha-Torah kula, en shalich d'var avera, ha-chayesh shalich l'dvar avera. So the question is, aren't these laws obvious? Right, he's still... he did something, he stole it, and he didn't slaughter it himself, but he had someone else slaughter it. Isn't that the same thing? Right, what's the chidush of this baraita? So the beginning of the baraita teaches us that even though he stole it and he gives it to someone else to slaughter, that in this case, yesh shalech l'avera, the one who slaughters it is doing it on behalf of the thief, and therefore it's as if the thief is doing it. That's a very important chidush, because in the rest of the Torah, otherwise, we say there's no shalech l'dvar avera. If I go and ask my friend on Shabbat, hey, can you cook me some eggs? And they go and they do it, do me a favor. That the cook, one who cooks, is liable. Not, even though they're doing it on my behalf, doesn't matter. They're supposed to say, no, I'm not allowed, I'm not going to do it. If I ask someone, hey, do me a favor, go murder someone for me. So he can't say, well, I murdered someone, I only did it for the sender. No, everyone has to know that they're not allowed to murder. So generally we say, en shalech d'var avera, the sender is not responsible for asking someone to do a sin, because the agent should know, no, I'm not going to do it. Therefore, the sender is not liable. But here we say the sender is liable. The thief, he's the one, even though he told someone else to do it, it's as if the thief did it. My tama, why is this case different from the rest of the whole Torah? Because it says, utbacho o umecharo. So it's utbacho o mecharo. But I think we're skipping the o and putting the u here to show that we're comparing them and showing that they are the same. even though it says the word "ah," but since they're just not right next to each other, we're saying it has to be the same circumstances. Just like when you're selling, you can't sell it without another party there. You have to sell it to someone. You can't sell something to yourself. So just like selling requires the participation of another person, so too, if you do slaughter, yes, you can do, the thief can do the slaughter himself, but the chidush is if he does the slaughter with someone else, by asking someone else to do it, nevertheless, the thief is liable. So that's a special derasha that shows this is an exception, even though in the rest of the Torah, there's no shelech d'ba'bera, the agent is himself responsible, and the sender is not. So what, I told you to murder someone, you weren't supposed to listen to me. But here, the thief, even though he asked someone else to slaughter it for him, the thief is liable. That's the chidush of the beginning of the baraita. And the continuation teaches us a chidush that, if he sells it and consecrates it, that is still liable. What's the difference if he sells it to a layperson or he sells it to Shamayim? He's not literally selling, he's giving it to Shamayim, but still he's changing ownership and therefore is liable in this case and all similar cases. Next Mishnah. Ganav b'shuta be'alim v'tavach u'machar chutz mirshutam. Or she'ganav chutz mirshutam v'tavach u'machar birshutam. Or she'ganav v'tavach u'machar chutz mirshutam mishalem tashlumei arba'a v'chamisha. Aval ganav v'tavach u'machar birshutam patur. If a thief goes and steals an ox from the possession, the domain of the owner, right? He goes into the owner's land and takes a sheep, and he then takes it out of the owner's land and slaughters it and sells it. So he's going to be liable. That's the typical case. Normally, when you steal something, the burglar goes in, takes the sheep, takes it home or somewhere else, and slaughters it there. So certainly he'd be liable. That's the typical case. Or if he stole it outside, while the sheep were roaming around out in the public domain, the thief came and stole it there. And then, for some strange reason, he snuck it back in to the land of the owner and slaughtered it there. Also, he would be liable. The point is that he is only liable if he steals it and at some point it's not in the owner's land. So in this case, when he stole it, it was not in the owner's land, and so therefore the thief acquires it. He does an act of stealing. Or the third case, if he steals it and slaughters and sells it all outside the owner's land. He never went to the owner's land at all. He found this sheep while it was wandering around, and then he stole it, took it somewhere else or there on the spot, and slaughtered it. In all these cases, he has to pay 4 and 5. The only case he doesn't have to is if he sneaks into the owner's land, steals it, and slaughters or sells it right there on the spot. Right, slaughter right there on the spot. He brought his knife with him, and or he has someone else there that with him. He says, "Hey, I'll sell it to you." In that case, he's not liable. Why? Because in order to steal, you have to do an act of taking possession of it. And that's the law. You can't, how do you take possession of an animal? The most common way is by pulling it. So, right, you pull it, then it's yours. If you want to buy an animal, for example, right, you got to pull it. So if the thief just walks in, but here's the thing, pulling, moshech, only works if it's in public domain. If I go into your land and pull one of your animals, I don't acquire it. If it was a sale, I wouldn't acquire it. And if I'm a thief and go in, I didn't yet steal it, right? Just because, I trespassed maybe and broke into your house or went on your land, but that's not yet stealing. So if I just go on your land and move something around, I didn't yet steal it. I just moved something that's yours. I have to do an act of transmission, of a transaction that changes hands, that makes it mine. It's, of course, not mine because I stole it from you, but I still have to do an act a transactional act in order for it to be called theft. So the point is here that if I'm on your land the whole time and I don't take it off your land, so even though I pulled it, it doesn't do anything. Only if at some point either it was on your land and I took it outside or I stole it while it was outside, no matter what, it doesn't matter if I'm stay outside or going back into your land to kill it. It makes no difference. As long as at some point I pulled it outside of your land, that is an act of acquisition, and that is called theft. Haya moshcho veyose, umet b'shut ba'alim, patur. Let's say the thief, he breaks into the owner's land, and he's pulling it, but he didn't get to the border of the land yet, and the animal dies. The thief does not have to pay. Why? Because he did not yet do an act of acquisition. Pulling it on someone else's land does not transfer ownership. So he didn't even steal it, all right? So the owner comes out, says, who goes there? Says, oh, I was trying to steal your sheep, but, oh, it died in the middle. Sorry, right? So he says, oh, pay for it. No, I don't have to pay for it. I never took it off your land. So I never did an act of acquisition. I never did an act of thievery. So that's true. I pulled it and it died, but it's not my problem. However, there's another way to acquire an animal, which is to lift it. This works better for a small animal like a sheep. It's going to be a lot harder to lift a cow. But anyway, let's say a sheep. And so if he lifts it up, lifting works as an act of acquisition, even on the owner's land. So if the thief picked it up, or he managed to get it outside of the land of the owner, and then it died, then the thief is liable because he did an act of acquisition first, and so the death is under his while it's under his in his possession, and the thief is liable. Good. Netano libchorot beno or lebaal chov leshomer chinam leshoel lenose sachal lesocher he moshchov met b'rishut habealim patur igbiosh osiyom b'rishut habealim omet hayav. Gemara is going to discuss exactly what case this is, but it's going to start and end up concluding that it's talking about the following. If a thief gives a sheep as payment for a pijon haben, for his firstborn son, right? They're doing the pijon ceremony. We always use 5 coins, literal coins, but you don't actually have to use 5 coins. You can use something that's worth the value of 5 coins, like a sheep. So the father of the firstborn tells the Kohen, okay, I'm going to pay you with a sheep. Where is the sheep? Listen, it's in that pen over there. You can take it. So the father is also the thief. But the thief father doesn't go and pull the animal himself. He tells the Kohen. The Kohen doesn't know whose property it is. He doesn't know that it's stolen. So the Kohen goes around the corner there, and he thinks that this is permitted, and he takes the item, or it's as payment for a loan. I says, oh, I owe you money. Listen, I'm going to pay you with the sheep. It's right over there, right in that pen. Go ahead, you take it. Okay. So you take it, not knowing that this is actually someone else's sheep in someone else's property, and you're taking it. Or I'm the thief, but I don't pull it. I say to a shomer, listen, this sheep over here, can you watch it for me, right? Or someone wants to borrow something. So sure, you can borrow my sheep. It's right over there, and I point to someone else's property and someone else's sheep, or I pay someone to go and watch that, or someone's going to rent it from me. And in all these cases, the Kohen or the person who I'm paying, or the Shomer Shoel, they go and go to someone else's property, pull their sheep, and it ends up dying. Beshut ha-be'alim, while it's still in that land, patur, nobody has to pay. Not the one pulling it, and not the thief, because in all these cases, it's still there. It never left the property. So this doesn't change anything. The more interesting part is, higbi ha, if that guy, the Kohen or the Shomer, lifted it up, or managed to pull it, and it left the land of the owner, and then died, so the thief is responsible. Who's that? The guy who instructed, the father, or the one who told this shomer to go and get it, that person, the one who said to take it out, is liable. Why is he liable? If he just said he wasn't doing anything, he was just he just gave instructions. Well, in this case, he is liable, even though generally we say en shaliach ledvar avera. In this case, the person, the Kohen, poor Kohen, he doesn't know that he's stealing something. He thought that I worked it out. The thief father worked it out with the owner, or he thought that's maybe his own property, whatever. He's listening to instructions. Unknowingly, he takes an animal that actually is stolen. So it's not his problem. So since in this case, the thief planned the whole thing and knows that the Kohen is going to innocently go ahead and take it, or the Shomer, so the thief is the one that is liable in these cases for stealing it. And therefore, when it dies, because there was some act of acquisition, and it dies, so the thief is liable. That seems to be the simple reading, or one reading, even though Rambam says that no, it's not the thief that's liable, it's the one who actually pulls it is liable. So there's more than one interpretation of this Mishnah. Okay, Gemara, Ba'e Amemar, Tikenu Meshicha B'Shomrim Olo. A general question. Did the rabbis say that you have to do an act of pulling regarding a shomer or not? We know that for buying and selling, in order to actually buy something, you have to physically pull it. Even if I pay for an item, it doesn't, and then let's say it gets destroyed. So I say, give my money back. I didn't take the item yet, right? I didn't accept delivery. But if I pull on an item into my domain or in the public domain, that's when the transfer of ownership actually happens. So we know for buying, you have to do an act. There's different kinds of acts that you could do for different items. You have to do an act of acquisition in order to transfer ownership. That's true for buying. But what about for a shomer? Do we say that, let's say I say, hey, can you watch my sheep? So the second you say, yes, I agree to watch the sheep, then already you're responsible just by talking, because it's after all shomer. And so you now accepted responsibility. Or do we say that a shomer also has to do an act of acquisition, and even though you agreed to watch it, you're not actually liable until you pull the sheep to your in public domain or into your domain? Okay, that's the question of Amemar. Amar Rav Yemar, not Amemar, but Yemar, Tashema, I have a proof from our Mishnah that we just read. Netano libchorot beno o lebaal chobo, leshomer chinam leshoel nosei sachar lesocher, haya moshcho v'yoseh umet bershut ha-baalim, patur, my love, shomer, ushma amina, tikenu meshicha be-shomerin. So our Mishnah taught that if someone, the thief, father, gives a sheep of someone else's sheep to the Kohen, but makes the Kohen go and take it himself, or to someone he owes money to, or he's the one that we need, to a shomer, any type of these shomerim, and the shomer goes into that other person's land unknowingly and pulls the sheep, and it dies on the way out before he passes the borderline, the shomer is not liable. So why is he not liable? Because he did not yet do an act of acquisition. So he's not responsible for it, because pulling it in someone else's property does not yet make an acquisition. So is this not talking about the shomer? He's the one that goes in and is pulling an animal out, and he starts pulling it but doesn't make it to the border, and therefore he is not liable. What do you see from here? He's not liable because he didn't do an acquisition yet. If you said that a shomer is liable from the second he agrees to watch it, then he should already be liable just from the fact that they had a conversation. Shomer said, I'll take care of it, I'll watch it. He should be liable to that sheep even before he does an act of acquisition. So from the moment that he says yes, he should be responsible if it goes and dies. So, sorry, it died on my watch. Okay, I'm responsible. I have to pay you for it. Let's say he's a shomer sachar. He's paid for it. So he's renting it. So then he's going to have to pay for it. But we do not say that since he didn't physically acquire it yet, he is not yet liable. So we can conclude that the rabbis did say for a shomer, he is also not responsible. Not when he says agrees, he's not responsible until he actually pulls it out of the domain of the owner and into the public domain or into his own private domain. So you see, that's a proof, right? That a good answer for Amemar's question. Amemar says, no, Amale lo ganav. He says, no, I can interpret this Mishnah in a different way, completely different from how we interpreted it before. Here we're talking about when it says that he gave it to a shomer, that he is actually the original owner. The original owner has a sheep, and he's going away on a trip or whatever, and he says to a shomer, hey, can you watch the sheep for me? And he gives it to the shomer. The shomer has it, and a nice, peaceful day. Everything is good. Then the ganav goes into the property of the Shomer and starts pulling the sheep out, and he pulls it only a little bit and it dies, the thief is not liable. But if he pulls it all the way out to the street, then he is liable. That's the case we're talking about. We're not talking about the Shomer pulling it, but rather the thief pulling it. So therefore, there's no proof. Wait a second. Hatena le'resha. We already know that from the beginning of the Mishnah, that if a thief goes into an owner's land, then and he starts pulling it, but only pulls a little, and not to the border, so he's not liable. If he pulls it out to the outside of the property, then he is liable. So we already know that. So why would you need the sefa to teach me the same case? And the answer is tana ganav she ganav mi bet ha'ba'alim, u'tana ganav she ganav mi bet shomer. The resha is talking about a thief that steals from the owner's land, and the sefa is a thief that steals it from the shomer's land, and wants to tell us that it's the same law, whether he steals it directly from the owner on the owner's land, or he's stealing it from the shomer while it's in the shomer's property. It's the same law. If he only pulled it a little, he's not liable. If he pulled it off the property, then he is liable. However, Rav Asher says to Amemar, do not reject Rav Yemar's answer. His answer is good, because your interpretation doesn't make sense. What's the difference if the thief pulled it and stole it from the house of the Shomer, or if he stole it and pulled it off of the property of the original owner? It's the same thing, right? It's the same case. The Mishnah wouldn't have to have a resha and a sefa, both for these cases that are so similar, right? There's really no essential difference between them. And therefore, you know what, Rav Yemar's interpretation, the one that we had, the way we interpreted the whole time, is better. Ela lav shomer, rather, it's the shomer that's pulling it. The thief says to the shomer, hey, can you go and get that sheep and watch it for me? Shomer, thinking that it belongs to the thief, goes and pulls it. If he pulls it a little, he's not liable. If he pulls it off the property, then the shomer himself is liable. Ushma minati kenu mishicha b'shomerin shema amina. And therefore, this is, in fact, a good proof that the shomer does not accept liability when he says, I'll watch it. He only is liable when he actually acquires the item that he's meant to watch. And we have another statement also of Rabbi Elazar that says, just like the rabbis say, that ownership does not transfer to a buyer until he actually pulls it, so too, responsibility does not transfer to a shomer until the shomer actually pulls it. We even have a braita that says so. Exactly the same law. And the braita goes on and says, Uchshem shakarka niknet bekesef bishtar b'chazaka, kach sechirut niknet bekesef bishtar b'chazaka. Just like land is acquired, land is different from movable items you acquire by pulling it, but or lifting it, but land is acquired by paying for it, or writing up a contract, or chazakah, using the land by digging in it or closing the gate. And so too, renting is also accomplished by money, with a deed, or with usage. We ask about this braita, sechirut emai. What are we talking? Renting what? Ilema sechirut emetalte, metalte b'neshe taranin hu. If it's renting items like an ox or like a lawnmower, then, well, can you buy acquire such a movable item with a shtad? It doesn't make sense that you'd be able to rent something with a shtad. It doesn't work. Amar chista sechirut ekarka. No, we're talking about rental of land. It seems pretty obvious, right? Just like you can buy with land in these three ways, so too you can rent land in these three ways. So however, for every item, this is important, however you acquire it when you're buying it, any of the methodologies, so too the same methodologies would apply to renting an item or transferring it to a shomer. Amar Rabbi Elazar, ra'u shehitmin b'chorashin, v'tavachu machar meshalem tashomer arba v'chamisha. We have an interesting case of a thief who's hiding behind the bushes, behind a tree. And he's waiting to pounce on a sheep. And so there's witnesses that see him do that. They see him hiding behind the tree. And he jumps out with a knife in his hand. And he jumps on a lamb and slices its throat and slaughters it. Or he sells it right there on the spot. apparently without even pulling the sheep, he has to pay 4 and 5. That's the statement of Rabbi Elazar. We ask, Amai, halo mashach, why? He didn't pull it. He never stole it. Right, he never did an act of acquisition in the first place, and so if he didn't steal it, then why should he be liable for slaughtering it or selling it? Amar Rav Chisda shehikisha bemakel. So Rav Chisda says, he explains, even if he didn't physically grab onto its leg of it and pull it, if he hit it with a stick, let's say he had to get it under control before he could slaughter it, so hitting it with a stick, that also makes it, causes it to move. And that's the same as pulling it. It doesn't have to be literally pulling, but any causing to move is an act of acquisition. And so therefore, with that hit, he acquires it, and then he immediately then slaughters it or sells it. So he is liable. Another question on that statement. We know that one has to pay 4 and 5 only if he's a burglar in the night. Or it doesn't have to be in the night, in a case where he's hiding his identity. We'll see why that law is we're going to see that in a minute, the reason for it. So only if he is hiding out, then he is has to pay 4 and 5. But if he's out in the open, and then he does not pay 4 and 5. A gazlan, right? A robber in daytime does not. Now in this case, it's true he was hiding, but it says they saw him. Since people saw him, so he was seen. That's like a gazlan. If he's a gazlan, he does not have to pay 4 and 5. The answer is kevan deka mitamere minayhu ganavhu. Yeah, but he was hiding from them. In other words, this guy, he was trying to be sneaky and run up behind a herd and just grab one of the animals from behind and slaughter it immediately and then right and hide out in the bushes again. So he did not want to be seen. Happens to be he was caught. He was trying not to be caught. The only time that someone is called that, so he's still a ganav. When someone is a gazlan, that means he's so brazen, he doesn't care if people are watching. He goes even to the into the victim himself, right? He goes right up to his face and says, "Hey, I am taking this." And this is how we explain. Vela gazlan hechidame. Don't people usually hide? What would be a case of a gazlan? Amar biabu kigon benayo benyo yadash nemar veigzolet hachanit miyad misri veargehu bahanito benayo benyo yada. One of the great heroes of David, it lists all his mighty deeds, and one of his deeds that shows his courage is that he went and fought and an Egyptian guy, and the Egyptian guy had a spear, and he didn't. Benayahu did not have a spear, so but here he just went up to the Egyptian, stole the spear, pulled it right out of his hands, and he Benayahu killed the Egyptian with the Egyptian's own spear. So he's so brazen and so tough, he doesn't care. He just goes and walks right up to a person and says, "Hey, that's a nice sandwich you got there. That's mine now." And he doesn't care that people see him. That's the case of a gazlan, who would definitely have to pay back the item and the double, but does not have to pay back 4 and 5 if he goes in up to a person and just takes his ox right in front of him and slaughters it. He doesn't pay 4 and 5. Rabbi Yochanan amar kegon ba'alei shechem shenemar ve'yasimu lo ba'alei shechem me'arbim al rashi harim ve'egzul kol asher ya'abor aleihem ba'darech. Rabbi Yochanan has a different example of the people of Shechem that set up an ambush for Avimelech on the top of mountains, and everyone that came along, they would rob them, right? They would just jump out and rob all the people. They're not sneaking up in the middle of the night into someone's house where they won't be seen, right? They're going right out in front of them and saying, oh, there's some nice merchandise you have, and they're robbing all the people. Rabbi Abhu, how come he didn't give this example of the people of Shechem? So, well, they're hiding, right? He says they're setting ambushes. So you see, they're hiding themselves. So that's not a gazlan. They're like a navim. That's not a good example of the 4 and 5. But why does he bring this example if in fact they're hiding? He explains, no, they're hiding just to make an ambush. If they stand in the middle of the street, then people are going to run away from them and they won't be able to catch them and steal them. So they're hiding behind the trees so that when people will come, it will be easy to jump in front of them. But they're not scared. Eventually, they jump right in front of them and say, "Hi, right? I'm here. I'm from Shechem, and I'm here to take your merchandise." So they're not actually scared of the people that they're stealing from. They know that they'll be seen. They're only hiding so that to add an element of surprise so that it'll be easier to steal, unlike a robber, a burglar that goes in the middle of the night, doesn't want to be seen by anybody, or apparently this guy that we started with in Bial Azad's case, he's probably just sneaking, he's behind a tree, and he'll sneak up and slaughter a sheep, and then pull it back behind a tree, and hopefully even the shepherd won't even notice. Okay, good. Now we ask, Shalu Talmid David Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, v'nei ma hechmira Torah beganav yoter mi gazlan. The students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ask him, how come the Torah is more stringent regarding a ganav who is hiding, who has to pay 4 and 5 if he then not only steals but slaughters or sells it, more than a gazlan who does not have to pay the 4 and 5? Amar lehen zeh hishva kevod ayved lechvod kono, zeh lo hishva kevod ayved lechvod kono. The brazen robber in the middle of the day, he equates the honor of a servant, meaning human beings who are all servants of God, to the honor due to the Creator. In other words, he's an equal opportunity, equally not fearing. He doesn't fear God because he goes and steals from people, so he doesn't care that God said, don't steal. But he also doesn't fear people. He just is fearless, which is not a very good trait. He's not scared of anyone, he just doesn't care, but that's his trait. He just doesn't care what anyone thinks, not humans, not God, but at least he doesn't demean God by being scared of humans and not God. Whereas the burglar, he does not equate them. He says, I am afraid of human beings. I don't want anyone to see me. I'll be embarrassed if the victim sees me. Other people will see me. I'm scared that people will see me and I'll get caught, or they'll look down upon me. I don't want to have that reputation, so I'm going to hide from people. But how about God? Is seeing you? Nah, I don't care. I don't care that God sees me. He doesn't care. He's not going to do anything. It is right. He's not seeing me. So that is even worse than the thief in the middle of the day. Ki biachol. Here's an example. Asa ayin shalmata ki ilu enah ro'ah ve'ozen shalmata ki ilu enah shomat. The person who is a burglar in the middle of the night, he makes it as if the eye of that is below, I mean God's eye that is below, it's as if it doesn't see, and God's ear that is below, meaning God's paying attention and hearing everything down but on earth, as if God does not hear. And we bring 3 pesukim that show the mindset, right? Why do people do evil? Don't they know that God is watching? That's precisely it. They convince themselves that God is not watching. Shene'emad hoy mihamma'amikim me'adonai lastir esav haya b'machshach ma'asehem. Right? Woe to those who go down in the depth and hide before God to hide out their plans, and their actions are in darkness. The rest of Pasuk quotes them as saying, who's going to see us? Who's going to know us? They think that they can hide. If they just go down under a bunker, God won't see them. Uchtiv ayomeru lo yir'e yah ve'lo yabin Elohe Yaakov. Uchtiv ki yamedu azab Adonai ta'aris ve'en Adonai ro'e. Or they say, Hashem will not see. He will not pay attention. The God of Jacob is not paying attention. Or they say that Hashem has abandoned us, forsaken the land, and he does not see. So woe to a person who doesn't care that God doesn't see. But at least if the person doesn't care about humans either, so then this is just a person that has no shame. Okay, that's bad, then I have no shame. But the person who does have shame in front of people, but just no shame in front of God, that is even worse. Tanya Amar Rabbi Meir, Mashal Mishum Rabban Gamliel, Ma Davar Domer, Shnei Bnei Adam Shehu Ba'ir Vahu Vasu Mishteh, Echad Zimen Et Bnei Ha'ir Velo Zimen Et Bnei HaMelech, Vechad Lo Zimen Et Bnei Ha'ir Velo Zimen Et Bnei HaMelech, Eze Mehen Onsho Merubeh, Heve Omer Zeh Shezimen Et Bnei Ha'ir Velo Zimen Et Bnei HaMelech. It's a good parable. What is this like? Rabban Gamliel said, it's like 2 people that live in the same city, and they both made a party. One of them invited all the residents of the city, Except he did not invite the king's family. And one of them did not invite anyone. He didn't invite the citizens of the city, nor did he invite the king's family. He made a very small thing just for a few close family. So which one is going to have a bigger punishment? I mean, the king, who will the king be angry at? Of course, he's going to be insulted. How could you not invite me? He'll be insulted to both. But which one is he? Which one will he punish more? It's the one who invited everybody, and you've invited everybody in the whole city except the king and his family. Oh, that's a terrible thing. That's a real insult. And so that this person deserves to be punished. The one who just made a small affair, he didn't invite the lay people, his neighbors either, right? He didn't invite his first cousin. So, okay, he made a small thing, so the king still may feel grieved. Oh, he didn't invite me and my family, but still he won't be so angry. So this is a good lesson. If you're going to make a big wedding, then you better invite everyone. If some people you don't want to invite, just make a small wedding, and then you have an excuse. Amar Rabbi Meir, bo oreh kama gadol koach shel melacha asho shebitelo melachto. Hamisha se shelo bitelo melachto arba'a. And now we're going to explain why is there a difference between 4 and 5, 4 for a sheep, and he has to pay 5 for an ox. So two reasons. One is, look how valuable labor is. An ox, that where if the thief steals an ox of an owner, he loses out on his workhorse, right? Literally, the ox is used to plow and carry things, and so you need it for work. And now the thief took it, and the owner is out. Is not only did he lost an ox, now he has to go. He has no tractor. He can't grow his in his field. So therefore, the thief has to pay 5. Whereas a sheep doesn't do farm work, it doesn't do any work at all. It just walks around. It's there to grow fleece, and then eventually to eat its meat, but it's not doing any work. Therefore, that's not as important, and there he only pays 4. So you see how important it is that a person have his livelihood and all the tools and a factory and whatever he needs to continue his livelihood. That's much more important than just regular property. Amar Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, bor e kama gadol kibot beriyot, shosh alach bedaglav hamisha, se shehid kibo al ketefo arba'a. Rabban Zakkai gives a different reason. Look how important is human dignity. Even the human dignity of the thief. The ox, which walks on its own, the thief, he walks it out. He pulls the ox and walks it out. So since it's walking on its own 2 feet, the thief has to pay 5. But the seh, where the thief lifts up the seh, it's hard to make it walk, right? It doesn't listen to instructions. So the seh, the thief carries it up on his shoulders, which is a lot of effort and causes embarrassment to the thief that he has to walk around with an animal on his shoulders. Even though he's actually stealing it, right? Yet, look how we care even about the human dignity of the thief. Yes, of course he has to pay, but we let off one payment is given to him since he suffered this shame of having to carry the sheep, so he only has to pay 4. Okay, 2 beautiful lessons. Next Mishnah. En megadelin behemad daka b'eres Yisrael. Ava megadelin b'suria b'midbarot shel eres Yisrael. One is not allowed to raise small animals, meaning sheep and goats, in the land of Israel, meaning in the place where people live in Israel. The reason seems to be that sheep, they just go and wander and graze, and they graze in other people's lands and steal, and they graze so much on the land that they ruin the land. And so land of Israel is holy, and we want it to be remain fruitful for plants and trees, and we really want to make sure that there's no stealing other people's lands, and the land of Israel has to have a higher moral order. But in Syria or the deserts of Israel, even within Israel, the desert areas, that's okay. Now, of course, you're not allowed to steal even in Syria. You can't steal anywhere in the world. And anywhere in the world that you are, if you're a sheep, go into someone's property, they're going to sue you and you have to pay for it. So it's still not allowed. But the rabbis did not make this gezerah outside the land of Israel. And in the deserts, where that belongs to Tzosef Ked, it belongs to anyone, and there's not people aren't using it to grow grain and trees and all that so much. So then you can raise your animals over there and we're not worried about stealing or about ruining the land. En megadlin tanigolin birushalayim mipnei hakodashim velo kohanim beretz Yisrael mipnei hataharot. One is not allowed to raise chickens in Jerusalem because there is sacrificial meat there. Chickens, they tend to peck around and they go peck in the garbage, and then the garbage is all remnants of dead things that are tameh. And then they go and they peck around on the in the meat, that's the sacrificial meat, and they're going to make the meat tameh. So we don't want chickens because they're not controllable, and they spread tum'ah around. And in Jerusalem, well, there's a lot of sacrifices. Everyone eats sacrifices, not only kohanim, right? If you have kodashim kalim, the owners come, and anyone who's tahor can come and join the be'alim, the owner of the one who brings that korban shelamim or korban todah, and they share. So you have to eat it in the laws. You have to eat it in Jerusalem. So in Jerusalem, there's lots of kodashim, and they have to be eaten in a state of purity. And therefore, we want to keep any dangers to purity out. So no chickens in Jerusalem. Also, Kohanim are not allowed to raise chickens anywhere in Israel, because Kohanim, not only do they eat sacrificial meat is only in Jerusalem, but Kohanim are eating terumah. Terumah also has to be kept tahor. If terumah becomes tameh, it's no good, can't use it. So Kohanim should not be near chickens anywhere in Israel, so that we don't worry that the chickens are going to make the terumah tameh and cause problems. And megadilin hazirin bechol makom. One is not allowed to raise pigs anywhere. And Rambam in his commentary says that's not only pigs, but any non-kosher animal. But pigs are the most raised and eaten. And so don't be involved in the business of non-kosher food. Lo yigadel adam et hakelev, ela im ken haya kashur beshal shelet. One may not raise a dog unless it's connected to a chain, it's on a leash, because dogs scare people, and that you're not allowed to do anything that scares people. And porsin ni shobin layonim, ela imken hayara chok min hayishuv sheloshim ris. One is not allowed to set up a trap for pigeons unless it's 30 ris, a couple of miles away from the settled area, so that it shouldn't catch, the trap shouldn't catch privately owned pigeons. I own pigeons over here, and of course they're going to fly around, but they generally fly around within a certain radius. And so within that radius, they're probably mine. And so you can't set, or whoever's that live in the area. So if you're going to set up a trap to catch pigeons, it has to be outside of the, far out of the settled area where there are ownerless pigeons there. Tenor Rabbanan, en megadlin be'madaka be'eretz Yisrael, lo megadlin be'horashin shel eretz Yisrael be'suria, afilu be'yishub, ve'en zeruma be'chus al ha'ares. So commenting on the Mishnah, Braita says one should not raise sheep and goats in Israel, but in the forests of the land of Israel, or up in Syria, even in the settled areas in Syria, or one is allowed, and certainly outside. Syria has an in-between status because it was conquered by David, so it has some amount of holiness. But even there, the rabbis did not make this prohibition. And certainly outside the land of Israel is permitted to raise sheep and goats there. You still have to be careful that it doesn't go into other people's property. And you still, of course, don't want to ruin land permanently. But the land of Israel is holier, more special, higher moral requirement. Therefore, the rabbis made special safeguards in Israel in the settled areas. Tanya idach, en megadlin be'madaka be'Yisrael, laval megadlin ba'midbar she'bi'huda ba'midbar she'bisfar Ako. Vafa bishamru en megadlin be'madaka, aval megadlin be'magasa. Lefi she'en gozin gezral sibur elim ken rob sibur yecholin la'amod ba. Another baraita teaches similarly that one is not allowed to raise small animals in the land of Israel, but if it's in the deserts of Judea or on the border of Israel, like near Akko, that's okay to raise the animals there. It's not near where people live. And even though the rabbi said you cannot raise sheep and goats, little animals, but big animals, cattle, ox, and cows, that is permitted, because you can't make a decree upon the public unless the majority can abide by it. And so it's possible to live without sheep and goats right, in on your land, but it's impossible to live without oxen and cows. Why? Sheep and goats, you can raise them outside the land of Israel, and you can import them. Whenever you want to make a barbecue and have some lamb chops, so you just make an order. And they'll bring in a sheep, and they'll slaughter it at the butcher, and you can eat it. So that's okay, because you can wait a day. How long does it take to bring the sheep in? And you bring them in on a regular basis. They don't have to be grown in the land of Israel. Whereas the big animals, it's impossible to live unless you have them on the land. You need oxen to work the land. You want to plow the land. You want to carry stuff. So you need big animals there in the land of Israel in order to do your labor, and you can't import that. So that's the difference, and that's why the majority of people cannot abide by a complete ban on all animals in the land of Israel. And also, big animals are easier. They listen to instructions better. They don't wander around on other people's property as much. And so that is the distinction between the two. V'afa pi shamru en megadlim behemad daka ava mashha. Who kodem la rega 30 yom, kodem ishte beno 30 yom, bad shelo yashe et acharona 30 yom. Now, even though you're not allowed to raise the small animals in the land of Israel, but you can bring them, you can import them from a farm outside of land of Israel, and you can do that within 30 days before a holiday, before Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, or 30 days before you're going to have a wedding, right? See, they didn't eat lamb chops every day, only a very special occasion. So it doesn't have to be just the day before. 30 days before, you're already preparing, making a big wedding for a lot of people. So you make an order and you ask the farmer, bring in, right? I need a dozen sheep. So you bring the dozen sheep, and you can keep them in the land of Israel for up to 30 days before, as long as you don't keep it after the holiday. Even if you import it, let's say 3 days before the holiday, don't say, oh, I only had it for 3 days, I can keep it 27 more days after the holiday. No, the window of opportunity is all before the holiday, so that you have animals to celebrate with or celebrate the wedding with. That is permitted, but then you're supposed to use it all up for the holiday. That's why you brought it. So it's not a 30-day window in general, only the 30 days before the holiday. Right? So because you should not think and say, since the Chag has passed and this hasn't been yet 30 days since I brought it in, it's only been 3 days since I brought it, because I brought it 3 days before the holiday, maybe I have 27 more days. No, don't think that. That's why the Baraita says, no, it's permitted to keep it for a total of 30 days. It's all before the holiday. Once the holiday is finished, you can't keep those animals anymore. That's actually a good law, because it'll encourage everyone to slaughter the animals before the holiday, and then there'll be lots and lots of food for the holiday. And then if you can't finish it all yourself, you're going to have to invite your friends and family and poor people, and that will increase the celebration. The Braita continues, V'atabach lokech v'shochet, lokech v'shoher, b'lbad shelo yashe ha'aguna shebahen sheloshim yom. However, it's a butcher. The butcher needs a regular supply of meat, because everybody's coming to his butcher shop to buy, so he can't import every day exactly what he needs. So a butcher is allowed to buy and slaughter them, or buy them and keep them for a while, as long as the last one that he brought in does not stay more than 30 days. So if it's a butcher, he has a 30-day window any time of the year, from the time that he imports it until the time that he slaughters it, so he can keep a stash, because you never know exactly how much meat you're going to need on a day and how many customers you have, but he can know more or less. And so, yes, a butcher can keep a stock. He can't raise the animals from birth, but he can keep a stock for 30 days. Baruch Adonai Leolam. Amen v'amen.